Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 15th, 2000. In the Creekside room this evening is Margot Gordon. Today's session number is 2003 and is titled News Media and the Credibility Gap, the Promise of Civic Journalism. Let's listen in.
In the Graduate School of Public Affairs, and my husband Andy, I saw some of you at his presentation this morning, and I both teach there and have been there for about 10 years, 12 years. And we came to Holden the first time 15 years ago at the request of Ingrid and Jody, and came back this year at their request, and we might be coming in the future at our request because we've really enjoyed being here, and it becomes to be here longer and be able to learn more about more of you. We've been talking about, my husband's been talking about computers and the internet and so forth. And in my sessions, I've been talking about the news media and essentially the pros and cons of the way the news media are today, mostly the cons. And then trying to explain a little bit about a new form of journalism that is kind of sweeping the country in the small markets anyway, called civic journalism. And rather, I'm not going to repeat what I said the other two sessions, but this time I'd like to focus on one aspect.
Poltergeist?
Oh,
don't
worry. I'd like to focus on one aspect of civic journalism, which is an attempt it makes, or several ways it makes attempts to do a better job of listening to the community and a better job of giving voice to the voiceless, as they say. And I wanted to talk briefly about one way they do that and show a brief video on another way, another approach that some civic journalists have, and then ask Jody to help me out on a third way that a group in Chicago has been doing and has set up a model for doing it in communities. And I brought a book he had a lot to do with, at least thinking of it, brought it with me and was too embarrassed at the idea of talking about it in front of him, so I'm asking him to talk about that particular thing. And then at the end, I want to give you kind of a quiz and have you actually pick out news stories from a list that I'm going to give you, which ones you think are essential for people at Holden to know, the national and international stories, but then also get you to talk about what stories you think are things that have happened or issues that are of concern here that ought to be stories that are shared among everybody at Holden. So let me start with this first idea about fault lines. One of the things that journalists do when they go out to do a story is they're supposed to get quotes from authorities. And very reliably, they ask the mayor or the other elected officials, people in charge in various ways, for their points of view. And very often, the little people, and very often the people of color, don't get represented at all. About 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there were people at the Maynard Institute in San Francisco came up with a concept that they call fault lines, and they've been spending a lot of time teaching journalists around the country how to observe and how to do reporting in and across fault lines. Bob Maynard, who the Institute is named after, was he's the only black person to be publisher of a major newspaper, and that was the Oakland Tribune. And he died not too long after he took it over, and the Maynard Institute has been established in his name and works to carry out a lot of the work that that he thought was important. Now, these, it's going to sound simple in some ways, because in his formulation, the fault lines are in some ways just the ones you'd expect. They're the divisions in our society, the social divisions in our society that make a difference about whether or not you would be in the category of person that would be contacted by the media when they're doing a story, even if it's a, they might not contact you, even if you'd be the most relevant person because you were on the wrong side of these fault lines. The fault lines that they use are, first of all, race. Usually whites are the ones that get contacted, but there are a few stories where blacks or other minorities would be the major one contacted. Second one is age. It's very rare for young people to be contacted about a story, even when it's about young people. You'd think they'd be the authorities in that case, but they're very rarely the ones consulted. Also, third one is gender. In the past, it was especially true that men were the major ones contacted, although now there's much more equality in that way. They also thought about social class as a as making faults in the social fabric or the social landscape. And usually it's people from the upper class or upper middle class that are the primary contacts of the media. They're the people that journalists tend to know or tend to think that they should try to contact. And lots of times they're not the right people or the relevant people for a particular story. Another fault line, they gave the name geography. And basically that means location. And location lots of times has to do with all the other things. It's tied very much to race and to social class, but it also can have to do with rural locations, suburbs, and that kind of thing. And depending on the issue, some may be more or less important. Now, one of the key things their institute teaches people to do is to try to have conversations, get information from people on all sides of the fault line, or maybe those that are actually in the faults of a given story. And they do lots of workshops and train people on how to do this. Now, it's in a way very conceptual until you start working with individual stories. And in the training, what they do is help reporters work through the stories in their own communities. Now, a second way, and related to this, is something they call civic mapping. And civic mapping is another way of getting at this same issue. There's a group from them that was very active in Minnesota. You're shaking your head. I don't know if you heard of them, the Harwood group, who developed this concept of civic mapping and has made a great deal of money at it, teaching it to journalists around the country. And again, what they do is try to get people to think, journalists to think about locations that you could actually plot on a map to show how good your coverage is of the community that you're trying to serve. And they also think of location in terms of the kinds of places that people gather. And especially important for them are the ones they call third places. It's not where the mayor is. It's not the head of agencies or organizations, but they're gathering places where people talk. And you can learn about the real issues and learn about people's opinions. And they teach reporters how to find these third places. And they've got a whole bunch of categories that they use about what kinds of people go to certain places. And the ones they encourage journalists to look at the most are called catalysts. They name them as catalysts. They're the people who are likely to go to these third places and to talk with people and then decide, well, why don't we do something? and they start talking about what they might do. There's also the ones that they call connectors, and those are people who go cut across these levels. So the official agencies, the unelected but nonetheless official people who are heads of companies and that kind of thing, and then these third places and connectors kind of cut across, and so they're good people for journalists to know. Now those, I mean, so those two ways are just kind of some initial to give you an idea of how journalists are working at this in ways that aren't, it isn't really the old-fashioned way. And it's causing a lot of them to see their communities in entirely different ways than they had in the past. Now, what I want to show you this tape on is, it's a form of doing the same thing, but that makes use of the internet. And it's this particular one is, the man you'll see is named Glenn Ritt, and he decided that there were a lot of voiceless people in his community, and he decided to make it possible for groups of people to do what he calls self-publishing. And so he allowed, or encouraged, people to make connections with one another, but on the newspaper's website. So he's found ways to make lots of connections that most people wouldn't think of, and these people haven't thought of before either.
Myrtle, mm-hmm. I think it'd be awful if you put that blind down.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Staring at that light.
All right. No, just push this play on the VCR.
Oh,
that's forward.
What did
I do?
Oh, stop!
What did I stop?
Was it very cute?
Yeah.
The region. I'm not the techie on this. When I met him, he was already a techie, and so I figured, why should I bother? He was the editor of a newspaper in Bergen, New Jersey. Are any of you from
experiments I'll show you have several things in common. One is they represent literal partnerships, institutional partnerships with the community between the newspaper. And two, they are spiritually nurtured by the civic journalism discussion. They could not have happened if I didn't happen to become a part of this world. What you're looking at here is Insight, which is a web world for teams by teams, www.teamvoice.com. It started about 9-10 months ago, for real, with three high school students. The game plan was to simply bring them into the newsroom and have them become the editors for the newspaper vis-a-vis the team population. In Bergen County alone, there are 110,000 potential teams. Many of them dispiritingly do not read the newspaper, despite their in common interest in news. It is now 60 full-time staffers, and I'll explain full-time. They all are students between the ages of 14 and 18 at a magnet high school called the Academy for the Advancement of Science and Technology. They have dedicated close to 4,000 hours to this project, and it represents more than 500 different pages within this world. The last couple of months, as you can see, View a Teen Boys School, we have expanded the network to include more than 60 foreign teen boys correspondents representing more than 20 other schools in our area. And we are now adopting individual school newspapers and individual journalism programs so that eventually it's a network without any end to it. It is a contractual relationship between the newspaper and the county school board. The moment that the content ends up online, it is now owned by the Record for libel and trademark issues. There is virtually no day-to-day supervision of this world. They have full run digitally of everything that the Record has available to anybody. But we feel that somebody who's 40 years old, a white and a male, doing a wire report, no matter how well-intentioned, cannot tell the story or utilize the millions of dollars of resources we have to reach this one population. You can see the site map, and it goes on and on and on. We're also learning that these young people have many important lessons to teach us about how to process, filter, program, and gather news. Hot issues, I'm just going to give you a chance to look at some of this. This is one of the nine areas, and it's real time. It also contains a great deal of interactivity and the ability for teens to be able to deal with the issues. This is very typical of what a teen works on. So teen voice and insight is growing as a product that lets a particular community relate to the Record in ways that they never have before. And it leverages that community on all levels, from content development to graphics to marketing and distribution, so that we can make inroads into that community. But the Academy for the Advancement of Science and Technology is a very special place. And the question that we're beginning to ask is, how can we extend that network so that other schools throughout the region can participate not only in Teen Voice, but in this dynamic new web world? One way to do it is to literally go and superimpose Teen Voice into websites that can be self-published by the high schools themselves. So it's a community self-publishing strategy based on software that we're working with COS, Inc. and IBM. Thus, we provide the schools without the technology, not just the ability to publish online, but to publish in a network fashion. Basically, this is an example of the Teaneck site, where scores of people at Teaneck High School are simultaneously developing the content of their web world, which connects not only to Teen Voice, but to the Record, so that we can share each other's databases, and the Record becomes, in effect, the information infrastructure to help this community be enabled and to use new technology to help them formulate their community. We're watching different high schools create different subgroups so that eventually we're going to be able to have guidance department networks that go horizontally across 70 school districts, or churches where different denominations will be able to talk to each other across networks that the Record is inextricably and necessarily a part of. We don't control the standards or values that suggest what should be done in these worlds. We simply facilitate. The beauty also is that we can aggregate a tremendous amount of data, information, wisdom, and insight that heretofore we weren't even aware of. We're doing these experiments not only in the school area, but basically with the county government itself. Bergen Online could be our competition. Instead, it becomes very much an alliance. And Bergen Online could not manage working with companies like Bell to create a system and a network where information can cross lines and where we empower the communities themselves to become the publishers. Bergen One Stop Career Center is a consortium. Of at least these number of public agencies that have never been able to talk to each other before. Not only are they going to be centrally databased through the record, but with search engines that we have, we'll be able to create communities, and those communities will be determined by the consumers of those communities by virtue of how they search and how they communicate with each other. And no matter what happens, the record is embedded within their world. These self-publishing technologies allow individual communities not only to participate on the internet, but they provide tools for organizations to also exist as an intranet. So, believe it or not, the record is providing organizations with the ability to communicate within their own community for themselves. But even when they are using it as an intranet, the record is a partner with them and totally available, not just as a hyperlink, but as a resource for them, for them to use as they need us. And eventually we can probably target our information to their needs because they're going to tell us how they're going to need us. There's a site that's going up on Monday around a story about binge drinking, teen binge drinking. They have built a whole community of interest and resources so that teens who are concerned about drinking can not only read the stories, but interact and go places to learn more about how to deal with these issues. They're problem solvers. Now back to straightforward, old-fashioned media. This is faith and values. This is the work of more than 500 houses of worship in Bergen County alone. The entire editorial staff is made up of representatives of 12 denominations, from Hindus and Baha'is to Buddhists and Muslims to Jews to Koreans, Christians. From the mission to the goals to what is known as assignment execution, it is their product. What we lend to them is the journalistic infrastructure that can produce it, help edit it, and give them guidance from the standpoint of layout, the copy of it. But they bring their experience, their credibility, their judgment to the table. And hopefully, along the lines of your question, we merge and become partners, creating a better kind of journalism than either party can do alone. At the same time, our professional religious writers do not participate in this product per se. I watch them design.
If anybody wants to see more of this, we'll hand it out. That's where
now he's really hungry. It's on the right side. Yeah,
that's okay. It's about 30 minutes long altogether, and it gives a lot of different ideas, including the possibility of having a community calendar that everybody, all these churches, all these organizations, will have access to the information about what the others are doing. And so if you want to have a plan a big event, you can try to do it at a time when it's not going to be a disaster for you. There's also, he talked about, in person when he made this presentation, he talked about the idea that of how immigrant communities can also develop a way to relate to one another. And he talked about Hispanic speaking people in the area where that newspaper is, and their ability to create a sense of community among themselves, and especially for people who hadn't known of one another's existence and so forth. What kind of comments does viewing that make you think about? Yes?
Well, I was just wondering, essentially what it does is helping people create some websites with information about themselves.
Right.
Isn't that basically it?
It's basically it. They do it on their, but the, I don't know if you heard this, but when, it didn't quite come across this way, but when all those people use the record facilities, they use their website to do this, the information then belongs to the record. They talked about it in terms of it being, that they're there to help them, and They can help them with things like libel and so forth. Well, they also are providing free reporting, free writing, all kinds of other things for the record, and the record owns that information. And they also didn't talk about the fact that when they of course sell the software that creates this all around the outside, there are borders for advertising, which they sell. And I guess it doesn't bother teenagers very much to have all this stuff around there, but it certainly bothers me and a lot of other people who watch, who try to go to these websites to look at them. Some of them flash, and you know, it makes it very, some people think it's attractive and attention-grabbing, and others feel like it's makes it very difficult. But in any case, this newspaper, this Bergen Record, now thinks of itself not as a newspaper, but as an information provider. They see themselves as serving the community in presenting a lot of different kinds of information. And they certainly bring in other things from around the world to their own website that the people who subscribe to their website then have access to. Were you gonna say something?
Well, it seems to me it is a little bit more than people creating their own websites and talking about themselves. I mean,
right.
The story about the young people doing their own stories and researching stuff and probably beginning to act on stuff like binge drinking, I would imagine, and be more and more sort of real citizens dealing with these questions. I think probably it's one of the byproducts, I guess, that they're aiming at.
Well, it certainly is. And because, again, the surrogate journalism, the goal of it is to enhance, empower, engage people in civic action. And it's supposed to, and this, before they claim that they're civic journalists, they're supposed to have that as a goal.
We're fun to think about study circles online before intersecting with each other through the newspaper or something.
Yeah, and I was thinking too, it's sort of like the new version of the public square.
Yep.
Yes.
People literally physically stood around and talked, and so right. Now you've got this internet.
And I think it is especially useful for the unheard voices.
Yeah.
I'm part of something called Washington News Council, and there's now a case of being brought to our news council by teenagers who think that they are very badly portrayed in the news media, and they want the news council to take a position on that. A class action kind of suit. None of us quite know, you know, how to deal with this, and we're talking about how to, you know, whether or not we should be taking class action cases and that kind of thing. But there seems to be a place for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I'm wondering about is, like, what do they do to filter what they get? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things about the web is when you publish something, it's out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's no filter, there's nothing that's in between the person that reads it and the person that writes it. You know, you said that they're protecting this library, but what's to stop people from making the comments?
Well, they claim that they do copy editing, and that normally includes everything from spelling and writing the headline to keeping libel out.
And fact-checking, do they, I mean, is this accurate? Are they acting as an intermediary in the way a city desk would or that editor would?
They say they are. I can't believe that they are on all their different sites, but certainly anything that actually, you know, actually appears as a news thing on their site, supposedly they are. So that's, it's a very, it's, I mean, the possibilities are very interesting. And like so many things we seem to have talked about this week, there's a chance that this is very good and could be very helpful for civic participation, and there's also the opportunity for it to go the other way unless we, as a group of people, take the initiative and engage in a way so that it is for sure used for good public purpose. And now with Jody in the room, I would love to have him talk to us about a different approach to community coverage that was experimented, I think, first in Chicago, in part because lots of good neighborhood activities don't get very good coverage, and particularly if there's no fault and or no corruption and graft or heavy politics involved. So would you
some of you know that for the last couple of decades we've been doing a lot of community building, both research and work across the country, particularly in lower income communities, mostly in cities but not entirely. And we put out a book or two in a series of workbooks, and really one of the latest ones, and the reason Margo asked me to do something on it, is called Newspapers and Neighborhoods, Strategies for Achieving Responsible Coverage of Local Communities. And it really comes out of our experience, my colleagues and I, of working in neighborhoods across the country. And not only are their stories not covered, but if you've all probably had this experience yourself, but you will find over and over again that at the top of the most hated institutions list in low-income communities is the downtown newspaper, particularly in larger cities. A lot of folks in minority communities and lower-income and working-class communities just feel like the only thing that the downtown media are interested in is the crime. And that if they're killing each other, it'll be on the front page, the old story, if it bleeds, it leads. But otherwise, nothing gets on the front page. Margo this week has been working with journalists on how to address this kind of question and reinvent civic journalism. Our take on it has been, well, what about neighborhoods? What about folks in communities? Can they do something with respect to local newspapers? The traditional way of local neighborhoods doing something about big, powerful newspapers in downtown is to get together a bunch of people and beat them up, march on them, shut them down, protest, right? And so we were sort of thinking, well, are there some other steps that you could take besides militant sort of shutdown strategies of major newspapers? And there's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of sort of protests. So the book is about, it was really written by one of the best black journalists in Chicago, an old friend of ours named Byron White. He's been a community organizer and has been an editor of the editorial page of the Chicago Tribune, so he knows both sides of the fence. And it's advice to neighborhood folks. It's advice to communities about what to do to try to shape up your local newspaper, right? How would you begin to get something different happening at the local newspaper? So it reports, among other things, just a confirmation study. We did a little work in an African-American lower-income and working-class neighborhood and compared it to a middle-class white neighborhood and looked at the downtown paper's coverage of those two neighborhoods, middle-class white, lower-income black, and it was just stunning. I mean, all of the stuff that you would expect is there. The crime stories and the problem stories dominated the coverage of the African-American community, and the community life stories dominated the coverage of the middle-class white community, right? So the data are pretty clear about what's going on here. What can a neighborhood do? Well, we talked to neighborhood people and tried to get a sense from neighborhood folks about what they're really good at doing, what giving you when you talk to neighborhood folks, is all of the gripes, all of the anger, all of the stuff that they don't like about what the downtown paper does now. And so we were trying to think with them about, well, if you got beyond what you don't like, what would you like? What would make you want to pick up a paper in the morning? What would you like to have them cover about you? And so they made a whole list of things that the book talks about in terms of what they'd like to have covered. And then the book sort of says, well, now if you want that covered, the kinds of things that are going to help them, they wanted to see things that would help them make changes, positive change in their community. How can you make the newspaper do that? And so it walks people through, here's what a newspaper is like, here's what you in the community want, where are the intersections, how could you figure out what are the mutual interests of big media and local newspapers, and get them somehow to work together in a more symbiotic kind of a way. So that's mostly what this book is about. It's a set of advice from the inside of a newspaper, from somebody who's been in a community, about what to do if you really are pissed off at a newspaper and you want to try to change it, right? There is a second part of this book, which is quite interesting. It's from Toronto. And it's a report of a series of pieces of work done by Toronto neighborhood activists about the Toronto Globe. And they have the same complaints about the Toronto Globe. And they had actually invented a new word and put it into our vocabulary. We all know about racism and sexism and ageism and all of the other, but their word applied to the media is neighborhoodism. that the Toronto Globe and Mail thinks about Toronto neighborhoods in the same way racist white folks think about black folks, right? Or ageist elders think about young people. That there's the same set of lenses in the Toronto. So this is one of the cases in which Canada is not ahead of us. There are lots of other cases in which Canada is. So that's what this is about. Yeah. Okay. The civic journalism idea, the one last thing to say about this, that Margaret's been talking about this week, comes from within the world of journalism. And it's about journalists rethinking who they are in relationship to a lot of factors, including the decline of circulation of newspapers. But there's a second part to that discussion that we all have to be part of, and that is in our own communities, what do we do to make the coverage of us, of our communities, of our aspirations, make some sense? Unless it seems to be that community is at the table in a more powerful and knowledgeable way, probably the newspaper folks are not going to move far enough in the direction they want to see. So that's what this is about. That,
yeah, thanks. I think that there's a colleague, another colleague that has been involved in a lot of this stuff, named John McKnight, and he one time talked about this very thing, to us anyway, about the idea of coverage of neighborhoods ought to be more like the coverage of the business in a community or the sports in a community. And what he meant by that was that when you look at the sports pages, those of you who do that, you can find the good and the bad, and the whole story told by people who really care about sports. And similarly with business, the whole gamut of business is covered. The good and the bad, the failures and the successes, told by people who really know about what's going on in the business world. And that there's nothing like that in the rest of coverage. The rest of, especially coverage of communities, it's, they'll go to a community where there was a fire, or a community where there was a crime, or a community where somebody lives who was found to, take money from the government in some way or another. And it's not this total coverage, and especially it tends to leave out the constructive and the good. And so this is a way of approaching that seems, very useful and helpful. I wanted to try something with you all with this idea of you picking out what Holden needs to know. Now, I heard somebody today say they couldn't care less about what happened in the news when they're here. That they feel so far away from the quote, the real world. And I noticed that a lot of you talk about going out as if, this is in. And when you go out, it's a different thing. And I want you to try to put yourselves
out.
Well, put yourself in the perspective of being both in and out. And you're here now, and what kinds of things do you need to know, or should you know, if you're going to be a responsible citizen of Holden? What do you need to know about what's going on out there? But also, what do you need to know as a responsible citizen of Holden if you're here? And how are you going to find that out? And are there things that you want to know more about? So let me get you to count off into three groups. And you want to be one? One.
Three.
Well, going? Let's go this way. Okay. One, two, three. One. Two. Two.
Three.
One.
Two.
Three.
One? Okay. Yes? Did we skip you?
No.
Sorry. Okay. I'd like each of you to take one of these, and let's have the ones here, the twos here, and the threes here for 5 minutes. These stories that are listed here are, there's a group of international stories and a group of national stories. The international, all of these stories have, quote, slugs, and they're the four-letter capitalized word that media people use to trace a story through the system before it's either aired or either broadcast or printed. And so we'll ask you to pick out by slug. And I want you to pick two or three stories from each of the two groups and think of two or three stories from Holden, things, little things that you've heard about happening at Holden this week that you might think would be important for the community in terms of civic participation or civic responsibility.
Two or three from each group?
Mm-hmm. Two or three from each group. These are all real stories. There are no lies. And they all happened in the last 4 or 5 days.
You want priorities? Is that?
I want you to pick out just two or three from each of the groups, and someone needs to be in charge to say you have to agree on the two or three, and then we'll report out in a few minutes. So why don't you be in this group?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay.
Some right here.
Ask group number three to tell their international story, but use the slug. What two or three?
One was the symbol letters here, I suppose, are the Labor 27, or Labor 27 nations, including the U.S.
What's the spot?
LABR.
Okay.
That's group three.
Oh, sorry.
But you could have left it there for that.
Okay. Okay, Labor.
Fuel.
That's the Nigerian story?
Yeah.
Right.
Warm? Global warming? All right, what about national?
National King?
King?
MSFP?
MSFP, okay.
And
Microsoft?
AMA.
AMA. And what about Holden?
New director?
Anything else?
Impending board week coming up.
Board meeting? Okay.
What? You're not doing the stairs between Chalet's now?
That's not our part of the country.
That's under neighborhood news.
Very important to some of us. Okay, group two.
We didn't get real far. We got to international.
What did you get in the center of
Amsterdam? Yeah, you're right on group one again.
The LABR, group two.
LABR.
Meet.
Meet.
And warm.
Okay. International?
No,
that's just fine. Oh, you're
going to
have
to
have blank faces.
We're concerned about EPA.
Oh, yeah.
We only got about halfway down the list.
EPA. Okay, otherwise you're going to have blank space. And you can't make decisions, huh?
We're going to need a bigger type.
We're using consensus-style decision-making. So.
Well, that's one of the new things these days. There's much more of that than there used to be. What about Holden? Do you have any Holden stories?
The stairs.
All right. Group one.
Okay, labor.
Labor, okay. Thank you. That one is a good
idea. Yeah. the fuel.
Fuel. Okay.
And,
So maybe once a roundup of briefs.
Yes, there we go. Because it went with Iran, Korea, and China.
So we need to cover China, what?
I read China and the Korea.
Okay, so this is the world roundup. All right, what about national?
Most definitely the law.
Okay.
About foster parents, right?
Halt? Did you get a hold of them?
We did not get a hold.
Hold on, is it up?
We could just do an overview of kind of the different,
overview of.
Yeah, sessions in the sessions,
Okay, part of what this is designed to get at here is that you've got to think about your audience and anybody who's editing a paper or planning a radio or television program has to think about the audience. There's an enormous amount to select from among. I did this afternoon looking at the front pages of three newspapers. The front sections of three newspapers. And interestingly, several of the stories you picked were not from American newspapers. They were from British newspapers making comments about what they see happening in the world from their perspective, or even about America from their perspective. The other thing is that I hope you had a teeny little sense of the power that you have to select when you're put in that kind of a position, and the amount of discretion that you have, and how willing you are to use it when you know almost nothing about what your stories are about. Right?
I had no problem with that.
And it's this kind of, normally, the people who are in the role of making decisions about what's going to be first in a broadcast or in the middle of a broadcast or on the front page of a newspaper will have 15 or 20 times this many items to choose among. And they will often choose according to their own discretion, according to whether or not these stories have been reported by people that they're paying. If they're paying their own reporters to cover these stories, they tend to use that. It's the way they want to invest their resources. They also will pick ones that go along with their sense of what's happening in the world, of the kinds of trends that are happening. There's one guy who did research on this talked about themes in the news. And he picked up a lot of different themes, but especially one summer, he picked up the theme of crimes against the elderly. There were a lot of reports, and he grouped them together on the news pages that he was responsible for, and he created the sense in his community that there was a crime wave against the elderly. And the fact of the matter was, the crime against everybody, including the elderly, was going down. But the people in the community didn't get that from what the paper they got. And the editor was responding to his sense after he saw two or three different crimes against elderly, and then his mind sort of grouped it. And then the next day there was someone that, in near New York, and there's kind of an unendless stream of crime stories in big cities that you can choose. Why did you pick? Everybody picked labor. Why that one?
Well, this is a pretty labor-intensive place.
And you think that?
I mean, there are people working all over.
Yeah, you're right. Even kids are picking up trash off the road. They shouldn't.
They've got 27 nations were involved with it. It's pretty wide-ranging, and it's child labor.
And the decision was made in Geneva, a place that we all think. And also with kind of important events from the world perspective.
that story was in this paper and not in either the New York Times or the Seattle Times. What about fuel? Two of you picked that, the two groups. That's one about Nigeria, isn't it? Do Nigerians hike fuel prices by 50%? Why did you pick that one for Colby? 50%. What?
What consensus? Yeah. I can't seem to have been on the effect on something.
Yeah, that's
kind of what I, yeah.
Even though a majority of our transportation is by walking, so.
Yeah, but it hits my family when they can't afford to come in.
So diverse.
Yeah, I mean, blessing, you know,
and they want to come in.
The focus on diversity this week wasn't one of the reasons.
I guess we're separate, but not that separate.
How about that there's a lot of discussion about fuel because of the winter and fuel
burning?
But I don't think this was contextualized, because how much, I mean, it's sort of that you're globally, it's not a terribly important story.
Again, it was in this paper. What about, let's see, the people who chose meat, why did you choose that one?
Because that was very much so just pertaining to Holden. I would think, I mean, our meals are totally meatless up here. And we want to give stories that's going to kind of facilitate those good feelings about Holden, I guess. So I think we're meatless society up here.
Yes.
Almost.
Kinds
of
vegan.
We've been all over.
Okay. How about, say, the MSFT one. Why did you pick that?
I think that was in light of some of the discussions on technology that we've had recently.
Okay.
Oh, well, we didn't pick it.
Well, you didn't pick it?
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Number three.
Sure we did.
Okay. We're not going to get, I don't know if any of you who are here now are planning to come tomorrow morning at 10:45, but I'm nervous about keeping you any longer. But if you are coming, take this along, think about it a little more, and think a little more about what stories you'd like to know from Holden. Mm-hmm. How are you going to find out about the new director before she gets here? What about the board meeting? Do you think the board would like to have observers? We're going to report on them. I was interested in what these alarms were, you know, when the alarms went off the other day. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? How is it organized? What was the real story behind those? I heard rumors all